If you're listening on the podcast, be sure to jump back to the previous episode to listen to the first half of this conversation. Come back here for part two.
Welcome to the Building Doctor Show with Jens Johansson.
Now, how do we make our own power? How do we get, how do we get off the grid? How do we sell it back to the grid? How do we have power for emergencies? So, I mean, again, I'm old enough to remember, some hippies on a commune had some solar panels way back when, and they were junk and they didn't work well. But now we've got some really nice solar panels. I have one little solar panel on my off-road truck and it powers everything. I love it. And so being able to harness the sun, being able to, make your own power and do this stuff. So we were kind of wanted to start talking about where do we put them and then how does this drive some thinking for the boards that do this. And, we've got some real easy ones there up on the screen. Put them on the roof, obviously. The standalone carport is kind of a new thing, right? It's kind of a structure, if at least for shade. And then standalone back in the field or back in the corner. Can you talk to us about the pros and cons maybe of each one of these? And are there other options that you're seeing?
Without question. Obviously, first, when we do an analysis of a site for one of our customers, you got to find the sun and you got to find the sun in the south, right? We'll run helioscope designs, basically saying, okay, based on each individual month, how much irradiance, that's the term, right? How much irradiance is a panel going to generate? And we have to look at where it's located on the property. And then we have to look at the varying degrees of azimuth at the pitch of the panel, right? There's a lot of systems out there, specifically in what you classify standalone, we would call a ground mount system. Those are going to be your solar farms out in the desert, California, Arizona, Nevada, places like that. Those systems that are so big and so interdependent, they'll use tracking systems where the panels actually follow the azimuth of the sun. They don't have a positive ROI in the residential world. Even in most commercial settings, they wouldn't. They also create a pretty significant maintenance issue and quality issue, but they're viable. If you don't have a lot of space, start first and foremost, what they classify as a tracking system may be applicable because you need to maximize the irradiance out of a small space. The roof is always the first place to look, and you got to look to the southern horizon. There's a big question. There's an intersection everybody that's looking at solar has to go through. And that is the fact, am I going to do a grid interconnection is the term, meaning I'm going to send my excess power back to the utility, or am I going to deploy a battery and store that energy for my own use, right?
Yes.
We're big battery people.
Got it.
Big battery people because at Trinity, we deploy what we classify as ethical energy. We have incredibly stringent sourcing. All the stories you see on social media about where lithium and cobalt come from, that's not in any project we deploy,
right?
There's a lot of evil in this industry, I will tell you that, right? My general focus to anybody is do your darndest to buy American products. Still does not guarantee the source of the polysilicon and the lithium, the cobalt isn't coming from someplace you don't want to know about. In ours, we're big enough and we have enough leverage that we require a legal chain of custody of those materials. It means we're a little bit more expensive than others because people are partners that take care to do that. Those are not the cheap panels, right? You want to find a cheap solar panel, I will guarantee you do not want to know how that panel is made. So be cognizant of that in relation to your own individual ethics. We'll then look at, based on that decision, if we believe in not sending things back to the utilities because honestly, they don't want your power. They've reduced the price they'll pay you for their back feeds for the excess power.
Oh, they discounted the rebate, huh?
Way discounted. And it just simply doesn't make sense. In fact, you're going to pay to be a power generator for them because you're going to take on the infrastructure cost and they're not going to pay you much per kilowatt to send back to them. Reason why, back to the conversation 20 minutes ago, is they figured out how to use their rate cards to get all of the money they need out of you. They don't need your power.
Gotcha.
Believe it or not, don't get me started. they don't have enough power, but they don't need your power because they really only care about getting the revenue, and they can control the revenue by what they charge, right? So if we deploy, we very much try to create 100% what we classify as renewable or off-grid deployments. Those are very, very hard to do. And they're very hard to do because the amount of solar irradiance we're going to generate on the winter solstice on December 21st is about one third the power we're going to generate on June 20th. Right. And so what do I do with all that excess energy? I have to have, the term's called a dump load. I have to have a place to dump it. Mm-hmm. So if I'm talking to the multifamily space, the reality is you're probably going to need to do a grid interconnection in most facets, right? Yeah. You might have some battery capacity, and that would apply only if you really are in a place where you're not getting enough power to charge the mm-hmm. systems. The benefit of a battery in this point, and I'll move off batteries and go to these three, is most of the consumption in an EV charging world happens at night in residential mm-hmm. multifamily, right? So with a battery, you let the irradiance of the system charge the batteries during the day rather than using your individual PG&E, PSE, Utah Power, right. whoever, right? You let the irradiance of the panels charge the batteries. And then when people come home, they're pulling off the battery. This matters because as you start getting peak times in your rate cards from your utilities, they're going to hit you hard for 5 to 9. What you don't want to do is come home from work at 5:30 and plug in and pay three times the right. kilowatt hour at a peak time, right? You also yep. don't want a world where your owners are having to keep their cars unplugged until 9 o'clock and then remember to go back to the garage to charge them right, right. after the peak time exits. That's where batteries would make sense. Don't need to charge the whole system. You could do a hybrid of the two. Rooftops are always the first place to look simply because it's the highest point on the property and you're going to deal with the least amount of shading of the irradiance. Yeah. We are a huge fan of carports. That's actually where we spend most of our time because in multifamily living, if you have a very basic metal carport out there over the vehicles that people are paying for that space, mm-hmm. Then there's no sense to not turn that into a power generator. Right. We've developed systems that allow for some customization of how you move the EV charger around the spaces. There's different concepts that can be addressed in that realm. But you have to have a policy on just like if I'm multifamily and I have 400 units and I get 200 garages, you'll mm-hmm. have a policy for what the cost of the garage is and how people access it. Right. You'd have to have a very similar policy for the EV charging. Right. And how you want to charge for it, how people get access to it. Standalone, I wouldn't recommend in this space. I'm going to tell you with the way that we are trending from a societal standpoint. I don't want anything of this expense with this wiring anywhere where somebody can walk up to it.
Right. Good point. Okay.
We'll do ground mount systems and in secure areas behind secure fences.
Got it. Okay. So, I mean, thinking about the roof and the exposure to the sun, if your building already points east, you're going to have a tough time, right? So there's building,
there's almost always some part of the roof that has a southern orientation.
Okay.
And if you're not, if we've got a flat roof, right? Let's just say we got a membrane roof or different, mm-hmm. you guys know your roof worlds, right?
Yep.
We can always generate racking. We would put a panel, we would then maybe provide a 18 inch gap. We put another panel and we put them at 18, 20 degree up here, mm-hmm. you know, 18 degree pitches to the southern mm-hmm. horizon. The issue you have to think of when you go on the roof is you got to think about maintenance of the roof. Right. Don't do a rooftop array without thinking through how am I changing? How am I repairing? How am I changing shingles? How am I?
You're cutting ahead. You're ruining some slides for me.
No. Sorry, buddy.
No, that's okay. All right. So obviously what we've talked about, things to consider, you got battery storage, you got community meters. So if this array is selling back, now I need a meter that some communities have what we call house power, runs the exterior lights, runs the landscaping, runs the, you know, all the general things. But really, you know, I mean, unless your building has elevators and it's a high rise and things like that, if you have a bunch of, you know, 20 residential buildings, you don't have a real big community meter. So you got to kind of figure that out. Selling it back, we talked about, you know, rebates and making the meter spin backwards. But if it's just the residential install or the resident install, it's in my garage, in my carport, bolted in my house, I can make my meter spin backwards. Or I, you know, so the resident has to talk about batteries and meters as opposed to the community needs to talk about that. So that's what we mean there. So the first lightning bolt, I like these Brooke the Producer graphics here. So if you need help from, you know, Darren, reach out to him. He's got his email there, dleonard@trinitystructures.net. And obviously knows what he's talking about, can help you with big picture planning and more. So he has gracefully agreed to answer your calls. So moving on to kind of, we're talking about charging stations again. We're kind of going between these two things, but we can go pretty quickly through this one. This obviously an example of, well, this isn't quite 5 feet tall, but it kind of looks like a big standalone charger, DC charger, DCCD, something like that, but not a type two.
I think they're actually level two.
Okay.
There's two off that box. Two off that box. I think it's probably a higher power level two charger.
Okay. So then again, we see the basement of probably a multi-story building. So here's more of a downtown high rise. It's got a parking garage. You can dedicate some of these spaces. You can cut the concrete and put in these things if they're not already in there. Maybe it looks like some conduit coming from overhead. So fairly easy to do. But the other version would be, think out in front of the community clubhouse. Here's, you know, where it says visitor parking, or in an apartment building, it says future resident parking. And so maybe there's a few parked out there, but if you're in building Z, you got to park your car back over there to charge, and it's a little bit of a pain. So, but let's jump into the bigger list of concerns here. We got a couple of slides that kind of go through this stuff.
Can I step in on one thing on the last image? If you own a building and you have garage parking, underground, mm-hmm. whatever it may be, parking garage, check with your AHJ, your local jurisdiction, to make sure that you can put EV charging inside the garage. It is a growing regulatory issue where mm-hmm. the concern, it's being driven by fire protection, that EV fires cannot be put out with traditional fire apparatus. They have to be put mm-hmm. out differently. And so they burn incredibly hot. They're much more rare than social media will make you believe. In fact, there's less fires in an EV vehicle than there are in gas, in internal combustion engines. But when they do catch on fire, it is a fairly epic event, and they have damaged structural buildings. So what is growing right now is more and more legislation at a local level that is banning internal charging in parking garages. And I think it's not widespread yet, but it's getting bigger.
Interesting. Okay. All right. More stuff to think about there. So, you know, unit chargers or community chargers. So who pays? So in this instance, you know, some residents want shared community chargers. Others want their own in their garage. Obviously, it's own in your garage. That's pretty clear who pays for that. But how do you deal with residents that want, you know, so it gets into this board voting thing and association voting.
Let me make this one really easy.
Yeah.
We have a phenomenal customer. It's a great culture, loves their people. Their employees love working there. You know who they are. Just a very blunt statement. We do not give our employees gas when they come to work. We're not mandated to give them electricity.
Gotcha. Right?
So I think this is the piece, and I say it wherever I can. I don't know where it started, where everybody felt like just because it's an electric vehicle, we now have to pay for our employees or our residents to be able to access free fuel. It's not free fuel. You would not put a gas pump there without a card slot on it and let people pump gas freely. So I would just challenge everybody to die to the concept of electricity is not free, and it's going to become less free than it is right now. I think that's the general argument I would provide anybody that contests they should have free charging.
Yeah, well, I think it's a pendulum swing on policy. So we're trying to integrate this stuff, and you know, even 5 years ago, if you have an EV, you get to park right up front. You get free charging, or you get discounted charging. You get this, and then we're actually seeing it going, oh, we can't do that anymore because we don't have enough power. And so, do you think we'll see those things being pulled out of the airports? And I mean, they're all right next to all the airport elevators, and it's
I spoke on this topic publicly. I said we're apolitical. I am not a fan of how EV chargers are being deployed nationally with mm-hmm. taxpayer dollars right now, because mm-hmm. the vast majority of EV chargers that are being deployed under the NEVI funds or the Infrastructure Act are EV chargers that are just going to be phone booths in 3 to 5 years. Because as your Model 3 and the next iteration of it can go 400 or 500 miles on a charge, and we start deploying solid state batteries, which means they charge in one half the time.
Right.
You're gonna charge in two environments. You're gonna charge at your house, wherever you live, and you're gonna charge in Moses Lake or in Bend, right? You're not gonna charge anywhere else because you don't have to.
Right.
Right. And so right now, EV charging applies for us. We tell people corporate fleet is a huge deal, the biggest deal. It's the area where it's most relevant and where it has the best ROI right now. Mm-hmm. The second one is multifamily. The third one is corridor charging. Those are the three areas that EV chargers, in 10 years, EV chargers are going to exist. They're not going to be in front of your 7-Eleven because I don't need that power, right?
Right.
And if it was free, I might plug in. But if it's not free, I'm not going to pay you to plug in if I still got 300 miles on my charge, right?
Sure.
I think it's a little bit different in areas. If I'm in, say, Utah, and I'm I'm at Park City, and I've got high cold issues, right? And I have less battery performance. There may be some areas upper Midwest that this might be a slightly different conversation. But I think for the vast majority of your population, multifamily is critical. And it's also the most underpenetrated space.
Right.
There's nobody that has a good plan here. Right.
Right.
That's why I love this topic, because it's the forgotten channel.
Yep. Yep. Well, this is why we're talking about it. This is good. Let's see. A lot of these bullets. I mean, I had that third bullet from the bottom. Can these community chargers be a value add income stream? And I'm drawn to the apartment laundry room, charging you quarters to do it. And maybe that's old. Now they just put washers and dryers in units and just charge you more. But I wonder, you know, and that, you know, the various hotel chains, they charge you put your credit card in there. But as you were saying, some of those smaller, cheaper, I don't know if they're cheaper. They're off brand chargers, and they're about as reliable as McDonald's ice cream machines. They're always broken. And so, yes, I pick my hotels where I'm going, and it's like, oh, great. It's busted.
Yeah. And I can tell you the brands.
Right. Okay. All right.
There's some very good products. There's some very cheap product out there, but I think in essence, the answer to this question is yes, they should be a value stream. Just like if you have covered parking or you have garage spaces, you wouldn't just give it first come first serve. People are going to pay for it. Right. And they know, you just remember, this is gasoline. As we've always known gasoline, EV charging is just fuel. So people understand, if I buy an EV vehicle, I might spend less on my fuel than I did previously, but I still have to pay for my fuel.
Gotcha. Nope, makes sense. So then the bottom one, the typical trades we're seeing, you need an electrician to hook things up. You need a solar contractor that can put solar on the roof or wherever. You need probably a general contractor to oversee this stuff. You need an electrical consultant. Now, Trinity does all that. But if a board is just looking to put in a couple things, all of a sudden it starts, oh, I need to talk to these people. Are there any streamlined? Is that the right people you would talk to, or you'd find a good solar
electrician? Good electrician. There's a series of strong electrical houses that can pretty much single source this for you.
Okay.
If you're looking at I'm not a fan of putting three chargers by the community center. I just think that doesn't do anybody any good, right? I don't think you're going to generate enough money to generate an ROI for you as a property over time. But I think if you're looking at doing what I classify as a small to moderate deployment, if I've got 50 units and I want to get EV charging available for 10 people that they can pay for that service, I'd find a good electrical house. Because they can bring in the solar. They understand every aspect of this. I think if you get into the battery world, then I think you got to find a solar contractor. And I'm sorry that I say that. There are a lot of bad ones.
Okay.
I think one of the questions I saw briefly in here is like, nobody will call me back. This is the reputation of the solar space.
Right.
I would personally, if my mom was calling me from Wisconsin, I'd say, don't call a solar contractor. There are good ones. And I hate to say that because I'm diminishing the good ones, but I would find a reputable electrical house and get my references through them if they don't single source or self-perform all the project.
Gotcha.
If I get into the battery space, it gets a little dicier.
Gotcha. Okay. Good to know. All right. We're pushing up against our hour and I want to be respectful of everybody's time here, but kind of the last meaty slide. Common elements, how do these things, who owns it? Where do I put it? Is the roof a common element? Can I put panels up there? Incentives, there's all sorts of rebates and tax incentives. So who gets them? Moving out, who pays to remove at move out? I'm reminded of the satellite dishes. It's like, well, who has that dish? Oh, that was the tenant 5 years ago. Let's just tear it down. Now, I suppose if we've paid to put all this stuff on and I've got a 20-year kind of lifespan of recouping my money, I'd want to pull those off and take them with me. But so that's stuff to think about. Location, we talked about maintenance rules and budgets about maintenance and repair, not only on the panels but also on any kind of chargers that the association puts in. Policies, do you have a lock or a license? Are you restricted? Who gets to park there? Mounting, of course, rules about mounting to siding or in garages. You talked about fires. Are you going to let residents hook up a bunch of stuff that the fire department's unhappy with? Permits and
I think most of these logic wins. If somebody purchases their own, if they own the property and they purchase their own and they pay an electrician to put an EV charger in their garage.
Right.
At their condo, it's their asset, right?
Right.
I think if the association does it, then it's the association's asset, and then they charge for use. I think there's probably a significant revenue play there, because there are not many condos or apartments right now that have viable EV charging access.
Right.
There are more people with EVs than there are rentable or purchasable condos or apartments.
Yeah.
So I think there's just a piece. Let logic win here, right? Who is deploying the capital to build the asset base is who owns the asset. That's probably the easiest component to it. I would also say there are crazy incentives, and they are so convoluted and complex. With one of our customers right now, we are deploying a massive project. Massive, I mean, in like 12,000 solar panels, 7-megawatt array. And there are 21 buckets of money from tax credits to grants that we'll be accessing in this project.
Wow.
It's a massive amount of money. The ability to find them, you need a team of people. It's hard, right? I would say this is why we don't do small projects, because they're so burdensome in relation to the regulatory and the financial aspects of them. Where we're focused on would be a larger solar battery EV charging deployment. It doesn't have to be just EV charging or just solar. Mm-hmm. Most of Trinity is association with my faith. Mm-hmm. But it also is the creation of energy, the conversion of energy, and the deployment of energy. That's a solar, that's battery, and that's EV charging, right?
Gotcha.
So the most powerful systems integrate all three, and that's where actually the incentives lie. If you're not deploying all three of them, there's probably not a lot of incentives out there, right?
Okay.
I think the area in here that's the hard one to consume if I'm in an association or a board is how do I handle the disputes if I'm paying, right? If I have a garage, I've got the garage door opener. Nobody gets in my garage, right?
Right.
If this is sitting underneath a solar canopy, for an example, and somebody parks in the spot and I need to plug in so I can go to work in the morning, you have to plan for all of those aspects. We're actually trying to solve that at a design level. We're trying to solve in a design that allows the EV charger on ball bearings to slide between say, 3 to 4 stalls. And the only people that could access are the people that have the card to access it, right? So somebody could park in front of it, but I could go slide it 3 stalls down in front of my car. We're close on that final design. It's not been deployed yet. We need to go through some beta testing. But we're trying to address some of those problems in this space. But that is an issue. You'll get some really hot residents if I can't access my charger.
Right.
You're going to have hot, hot, hot people in the parking
lot. Yep. Yep. Okay. All right. Let's see. Let's keep moving. Okay. Need a little extra guidance. Just like plumbing retrofits. While we're not plumbers, we can help you with these electrical retrofits and requirements and things like that for your project. So set up a 15-minute call with me. You can scan that QR code or you can go to that link down below and we can talk more about it. All right. That's enough. I mean, we've been digesting. I almost have a little bit of a headache just thinking about all the little things. And that's what Darren does.
I do that to people, man.
So let's jump into Q&A. We've got 6 Q&As in the thing. I see a bunch of chats in there, but Brooke's going to run that for us. So let's just go over to the Q&A. Sometimes people like to be anonymous when they say that, but let's see. Jody says, we've requested proposals from several companies. Sometimes somebody comes out, but no one has ever submitted a proposal. And so I think you talked a little bit about that, Darren, of just there's a little bit of a market thing there. It was interesting on my perspective. I asked somebody, can I put solar on my house? And they sent me a very detailed model back and said, no, you have too many trees. I mean, you can, and we take your money, but we have integrity and you just won't get enough sun. And so I was pretty impressed that they came back to me with a digital model and said, look, you're going to get about 20% sun coverage because you have lots of trees. And so maybe they're doing some of that a little bit ahead of time saying, I don't want to waste my time. Those photos we had, you didn't see any trees in any of those photos of the ground and the rough and the whatever. So welcome to Pacific Northwest. Let's see. Phil asks a question for condo outside open parking spaces. How will charging stations be put in that avoid car collision damage, cord tripping hazards, limiting sidewalk space issues? Yes, absolutely. So these are all those rules that we're talking about. I think
if there's a physical structure that's easier to manage, we have retractable cords, other aspects, but yeah, one of the big issues that this industry has is the cords lay on the ground. People who, when they're done using them, don't roll them up. Similar to like an air hose, when you're trying to put air in your tire, they just leave them on the ground. I think without a structure, it's hard to do. I think the best deployment philosophies that we would recommend is to get a podium based charger, likely sitting on the line between 2 stalls. Mm-hmm. It doesn't solve the cord issue, but it does get part of it up in the air. And it gets it in a place where traditionally you're out of the path of the cars that can hit it and it frees up the sidewalk. But there's no perfect answer to that problem.
Right. And depending on the car, some charge backed in, some charge forward in, some charge are left side, right side. It's crazy. So designing for all of them, that's definitely something you got to think about. And that if it's community paid for, now we got to budget some money to deal with maintenance and repairs and all that stuff. If it's, your thing, you got to keep your neighbors out of it. Yeah, on and on and on. Okay, next question. Jody, any suggestions for those of us with an obnoxious flat roof? I think Darren talked about that. There's good flat roof mounts and good angles.
It's called solar racking. And they're prevalent, that allow you to, a good solar contractor, a good electrician will run a helioscope, determine what the pitch of that panel needs to be. Mm-hmm. Our personal preference for those environments are standing seam roofs, things that we can clamp to without having to penetrate the roof, because you have mm-hmm. a whole other maintenance issue then. But we know a guy that can help you if you get that problem.
Yeah. Yeah. we can do that. I was like, oh, that'd be interesting. Clamp. That'd be nice. Okay, Mark, how much energy can be reasonably generated using solar power? Question. Enough to charge multiple cars? Question. And number. Overnight? Question. If solar is limited in its effectiveness in more is solar limited in its effectiveness in more cloudy environments like Seattle? Yes, I can answer that one. But how much energy, let's pick a number. I want to charge 10 cars. How many panels do I need?
It's a great question, but it's going to be one of those variable answers. So we try to, in our deployments, we are focused on trying to deploy, I'm going to dump solar information on you quick. 600 watt panels. Traditionally, residential panels will be more like 300 watt. We want bigger panels than that. The 300 watt are not ones that would meet our ethical standards, to be honest with you, in most cases. Mm. But a 300 watt panel is then, it's called, there's going to be kilowatts. So watts convert to kilowatts, right? 1,000 watts is a kilowatt, and 1,000 kilowatts is a megawatt. In this environment, you are going to generate a system that's going to be based on the irradiance or models, or what we would classify as a helioscope model. And that is, where do you live? And what's your, we'll do a 12 month study. Our last project, we did a 25 year historical weather study to determine what's the worst conditions. What people don't realize is a solar panel on a sunny day, if it generated, a 600 watt panel is generating, say, 525 watts of power per hour. Mm-hmm. On a cloudy day, that same panel is going to generate about 200 watts of power. So they still generate power, even though the sun isn't out. That's one thing many people don't understand. And it just comes down to how big of a battery is in the vehicle. And there are dramatic differences in battery sizes in vehicles. Mm-hmm. And then how many cars are going to hook up to the system. And it's I've used the term like 10 times, but it's basically a helioscope model, which how much energy can we generate? How much energy is going to be consumed? And then we are going to size the array, the solar array, to meet the operating demand. Right. That's the one benefit a solar expert is going to provide you that maybe an electrician doesn't fully grasp, right. But they'll probably back into it. It's just too much of a variable. We would have to sit down with a customer. We have an assessment process we go through, where they have to answer a series of questions. What are the vehicles you're looking to use? What are the operating patterns of those vehicles? Mm-hmm. And then we'll size the array. Then we'll look at the property to say, okay, we want to know how many panels you need first. And then we're going to see, do those panels fit on this property?
Right.
And if that has to be done with a combination of rooftop and maybe solar structures, then we'll give a budgetary understanding to mm-hmm. our customers and what that would look like.
Yep.
It's just not an easy binary conversation.
It's a math question, essentially, how many panels, how many cars, driving time, and then shade and sun requirements. So, yeah.
And the difference between Salt Lake City and Portland are two very different conversations.
Very different conversations. So, yeah, that would be a solar consultant to help you figure that out. But good question. Next one, Manuel, for community chargers, can a reserve fund pay for installation? And then users will pay when they charge with their credit card. So, interesting question. I would dive into your bylaws, because governing documents talk about capital improvements or capital things. I would consider a robust charging thing a capital expense, such as tennis courts and swimming pools. It provides value to the property, and it would arguably increase your property values, like we were talking about. And so maybe your reserve fund can help you do that, but definitely get your HOA and your HOA attorney and your manager in there to read the fine print and understand what you're doing. But I definitely think it would be a value add for your community. And that's what reserves do. So
I would offer one piece to that is realize mm-hmm. this is a highly politicized topic. Yeah. So what one resident believes what the reserve fund should be used for, may have a very different opinion in the unit down the hall. So recognize that. There's some very anti-EV people.
Right.
So be prepared to deal with that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, last question. Here's your last chance. Get your questions in. So our complex has, I'm not going to read the whole one, but our complex has one owner with a charger in his carport, and he was kind of grandfathered in before we've had the chance to make policies. And so what would be the hesitation in allowing more chargers to be installed in the same way that this one was? This is the issue. It's coming up to the boards now. So we've gotten a few 1-3% are trickling in there and doing it however they want. Now it's time for policy and procedure and rules. And, you know, you can decide if you want to make that person upgrade to be safe. I would definitely do that. But, they were in it before we had a policy in place. So the impetus of this show is to get you thinking about policy, get you thinking about this stuff before that 11-year ticker comes around the bend. But also, rates are going up. Plans are changing, market trends are continuing. Just spend a little bit of time on electric vehicle and search the Cybertruck for Pete's sakes. The Tesla Gigafactory is designed to produce 1.5 million trucks a year. So it's just, is everybody going to be driving one of these trucks? It's crazy. So anyway, who knows? We'll see. Okay, let's see. That's all. Well, do we have one more Q&A? Nope, that's it. All right, let's get on to the giveaways. I've got some. Speaking of power, I've got a power bank to keep everything charged up with all the wires you'd ever need. We've got some sunglasses for all the bright power lightning bolts coming out of here, and a whole big goodie box full of stuff. So Brooke knows how you've signed up in the list. So we pick a number between, I'm going to pick a number. I'm going to say number 6 is going to get this. So she will notify you, reach out to you, and get your information to mail that off to you. So, okay. So did you know we have free resources for boards and managers? Go to learn.j2consultants.com/resources. And you'll see all sorts of videos on YouTube. We stream this everywhere you want to go. So Apple Tunes, iTunes. There we go. It's coming out. And Spotify and all those things. And thank you to Aaron. You've been a wonderful guest and full of great information. Do you have anything in closing as we wrap it up?
Nothing that we haven't already talked about. I think the one thing I would just get everybody to focus on is what is your reality if you can't trust utilities to get you enough power in the next 5 to 10 years? Because I think it is a much bigger issue than the vast majority of people recognize.
Right. Yeah. Good point. All right. Thank you so much. This wraps up the show. Thanks, everybody. See you next month.
Thanks, guys.
This podcast is part of J2's free live webinar, The Building Doctor Show. To attend the live show and ask your questions during the Q&A, visit www.j2consultants.com.